Do you know the number one thing that surprises engaged couples? Take a guess. The sheer amount of decisions they have to make while planning a wedding. Indoors or outdoors? How many guests? Are kids invited? Controversial. Which cake flavor? Seriously, how do you even begin to figure out what's right for you? That's where Zola comes in. Zola has everything you need to make every wedding decision a piece of cake, from choosing your dream wedding venue and vendors to deciding how to best spend your budget. With tons of customizable wedding websites, save the dates and invites, every detail will feel like you. Zola will even help you choose the gifts, experiences, and cash funds you really want. The next thing you know, you've planned your whole wedding all in one place. From getting engaged to getting married, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome to this week's episode of Rookie Roulette, where we focus on just a specific rookie. We're just going to kind of go through and analyze what their season has looked like so far, and then we'll dive into an interview with a guest who kind of covers or specializes in that team specifically. This week we have Bub Carrington, Carlton Carrington, and later on we'll have an interview with Matt Moderno from Believe in Wizards podcast. Really fun interview. He provided a ton of insight into Bub's season so far, what he likes, dislikes, and then also some we just kind of touched on the growth and impact so far of other young players like Bilal Coulibaly, Alex Sarr, and Keyshawn George. But since we are focused on Bub this week, let's kind of take a look at where he ended up last year, how his season's going so far. A lot of good, a lot of bad. Interesting mix of numbers, though. So, Bub Carrington, rookie point guard out of Pittsburgh. He was a one-and-done there, kind of one of the more surprising one-and-done players. At Pittsburgh, he showed a ton of really creative offensive creation with his pull-up shooting, pick-and-roll operation, his playmaking, rebounding, piled up triple-doubles, especially early in the year, really kind of exploded onto the scene, but struggled to finish at the rim, struggled on defense, at least consistently on defense, and struggled to shoot off the catch. And we're seeing a lot of those kind of similarities carry over into his rookie year. So last year, Carrington ended up at 17 on the No Ceilings Collective Big Board. He ended up number 11 for me personally and was the 14th pick for the Washington Wizards, along with fellow rookies Alex Sarr and Keyshawn George. One of the big things with Carrington so far is that he's really struggling with his scoring efficiency. When we look at Synergy, who provide incredible and detailed numbers, overall he ranks in the 19th percentile in scoring with 0.813 points per possession. He's below the 40th percentile in his three most common play types, which are the pick and roll ball handler, spot up shooting, and in transition. Not ideal. The dribble jumper has been excellent. It's been really, really good, as he ranks in the 78th percentile in pull-up shooting. But that's really similar to what we saw at Pittsburgh too, where he was one of the most dynamic pull-up shooters in the country. Unfortunately, he's also in the 36th percentile shooting off the catch. Now, why that's a big issue is that 46% of his possessions are coming as the point guard. For a point guard, you would hope that that number would be a lot higher. But in the 46% of his possessions at point guard, the team has a net rating of -16.4. Bad. But for a team that has two wins, all of these advanced team numbers are going to be bad. But what's worse are the 54% of his possessions when he's at shooting guard, where their net rating is -23.8. So by taking him off ball so much, the Wizards are kind of negating one of his biggest strengths, which is that pull-up shooting and playmaking. More concerning is that he's in the 8th percentile in at-rim finishing and is only shooting like just over one free throw a game. That lack of strength and confidence and at-rim finishing ability is a big issue at Pittsburgh, and it's even worse now in the NBA. So really concerning. Hopefully it's just a strength-based thing where as his body continues to mature and develop and he gets stronger, that's something that improves significantly in the coming years. But right now it is a really, really big issue. But when we look at kind of his current shooting and scoring efficiency and distribution, it's really, really similar to what we saw in terms of strengths and weaknesses in college. Not totally shocking. All right. Let's go over to cleaning the glass to look at some of his advanced numbers. And again, it's a team with two wins. It's going to be awful. They're all going to be awful, but some areas trend in a better direction than others. So overall, the Wizards have a net rating of -20.5 when he's on the court. Tough. His most common lineup is at 181 possessions, and they have a -30.8 net rating, and that is with him, Jordan Poole at point guard, Koulibaly, Kuzma, and Sarr. So again, they keep putting him at the shooting guard position, and Matt and I dive into, you know, what we like and don't like about that and, you know, potential reasoning for it when I talk to him in a few minutes here. Even more concerning, his 13 most common lineup combinations have a negative net rating that are all in the double digit negatives. Really concerning, but again, it's not all Bub's fault. I promise it's not. A lot of it's lineup construction. And again, it's a team with two wins. So all of these advanced team advanced numbers that involve Bub, they're going to be tough. What is really encouraging, though, is that when Bub is on the court with Keyshawn George, Alex Sarr, and Bilal Koulibaly, when those four are on the court and Jordan Poole is off the court, so the reason I specifically removed Bub, or excuse me, the reason I specifically removed Poole from that equation is to make sure that Bub, you know, was considered the point guard. And these are basically Bub's on-ball reps with the rest of their young core. When those four are on the court, they have a net rating of just -12.5, but the offense is running really, really smooth. Their offensive rating of 119.1 ranks in the 83rd percentile, and their effective field goal rate when those four are on the floor and Jordan Poole is off is 60.5%. That is insanely high and ranks in the 98th percentile. Those are the kind of things that you really hope to see from a young core figuring out how to play together. Now, the downside is that the defense is awful with a defensive rating of 131.6. It's really bad. But again, four guys who are essentially rookies. Koulibaly is obviously in his second year, but only played like 30 games last year. So four guys who are more or less rookies, the defense is probably always going to be that bad. The more concerning factor is that they only have 115 possessions of those four guys. So hopefully as the season progresses, we get a lot more substantial sample size of those four playing together because they're the future of this team. And as, you know, whether they make some roster moves or shut guys down later in the season, those are the four guys that they need to continue to build around, continue to develop and build chemistry and figure out what works and what doesn't. Bubba's had a really interesting season so far. Stick around for my interview with Matt coming up here shortly, and he provides a ton of info. Go support him. And then after my interview with Matt, we'll re-spin the wheel, figure out who we have next week. Thanks for tuning in, and let's jump over to my interview with Matt. Very excited to welcome in this week's guest to talk a little Carlton Carrington, Bub Carrington. We'll get a clarification on what name we're going with here. But from Believe in Wizards Pod, Bullets Forever, Matt Moderno. Matt, how's it going?
I'm great, man. Thanks for having me. Excited to talk about Bub. He's pretty popular here in the DMV already, so should be a fun combo.
So what's the official nickname or name that we're going with? Because when he was younger, he was Lil Bub Carrington, and then at Pittsburgh last year, he's mostly Bub. Yeah. But first name Carlton, are we going Carlton? Is it Bub? What's the kind of determination on that?
The team and teammates most commonly refer to him directly as Bub, so I think that's it's fair game for us to go with throughout.
Sounds good. So Carrington obviously was, you know, one and done point guard out of Pittsburgh, 14th pick for the Wizards, one of a trio of young kind of building blocks with Keyshawn George, Alex Sarr. We'll get to those guys more specifically in future episodes, but today we're focusing mostly just on Bub. So I kind of want to just start big picture with, and then we can kind of dive into any numbers or details as we go on. But on draft night, what was your and just kind of the fan base's initial reaction and kind of expectation to the Wizards picking him?
Yeah, so he'd become really popular with the fan base here as a part of the whole pre-draft. And I think there's been like a real desire for that next like guard prospect here in Washington for a while, honestly, maybe since John Wall. And it just, no matter what the Jordan Poole situation or experiment plays out, like you still just needed somebody younger, you know, to develop here in the pipeline. And they just lacked for like a good backup point guard for a long time too. Like they've been a little bit better about that, but mostly their starting point guards have been backup point guards. So I think if you can envision Bub as like this big physical, you know, point guard creator type for the future, like I think that's how Wizards fans kind of got excited about the prospect of him coming in, being local. The Wizards have not traditionally taken a ton of guys from the general area. Like, you know, there's a big Baltimore is not DC thing, but for all intents and purposes, like it's as close as we're going to get to, you know, one of our own here. And I think that just kind of made him extra popular. It's just like, okay, he's got the Baltimore mentality. You know, there's a lot you hear about that, and he kind of like personifies that. So I think, it was a super popular pick, and honestly, I think all three of their picks were largely pretty well received. The Sarr narrative changed a little bit after summer league, but and I think the Bub, hype kind of grew only more after summer league. So it was popular from the start, and I think it stayed pretty popular here so far throughout the season too.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that you kind of said in there was that point guard of the future, and it's like that this feels like the first time in a long time that the Wizards have like a very clear path, you know. You know, preparing for this and watching film and everything and diving into some of the numbers, they're rough. All of the team's advanced numbers are rough, but that's like, all right, well, they have two wins and like an over under right now of 14 or 14 and a half or something for the rest of the year. So it's like, yeah, you'd expect the advanced numbers to be pretty rough. So we're going to try and ignore most of them, but they are what they are. How is he just kind of fitting into the team and what their kind of long-term big picture plans are so far?
Yeah, this is one of the things where I have like, I like our new front office here in Washington overall, but I think my few nitpicks would just be, are the things they're letting these guys do as rookies the things that they want them to do or see them do well throughout their career? And I think it's sort of reared its head more on the Alex Sarr front than with Bub so far. But Alex Sarr shooting a lot of threes, and he hasn't shown to be able to make them yet. So is that really what they want from him, to be like almost strictly a pick and pop guy? And for Bub, there's been a decent amount of like off ball stuff. So what do they really envision him as, I think, is going to be interesting. I think fans who just saw like the highlights and the four assists, you know, at Pittsburgh were like, oh, this is the point guard. That's the term I used, because I think that's what we saw him come in, you know, come in as. But when you watch Pittsburgh last year, he spent a lot of time off ball there too. So is this just an artifact of like, you've got Jordan Poole there, he takes up so much usage or reps as an on-ball creator that you have to put Bub sort of off ball? Like, I just would like to know a little bit more about how they see him and want to envision him for the future. Or is this year, it just seems a lot like there's more of like, let's roll the ball out and kind of let them play like some sloppy pickup than it is really structured. Like, let's create like opportunities for these guys to be successful in the eventual role we see them playing. There's not as much like pick and roll creation. Like, I don't think I've seen he and Sar run like any two-man game at all together this year. And to me, that's a thing I would want to be able to see if they can do. I'm not seeing whether they can do that effectively or not, but like, if you're going to be this bad this year, I would try more of those kinds of things and start with the simple stuff and let him kind of expand up. So it's been a little bit of a mixed bag, and it just seems like they're very willing to just let these guys play through things. But then even the return of Malcolm Brogdon, you saw Bub's minutes kind of take a hit there. And there were a couple games where he played, you know, only 15 or 16 minutes, only took 4 or 5 shots, as opposed to playing 28 to 35 minutes and taking a dozen shots. So it's just, it's a little bit of a roller coaster. And I think that's probably what you expect though, with any rookie guard like that.
That the way they're using him really stood out to me too, because it doesn't feel like they're playing into his strengths or kind of putting him in a position to succeed. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you even look into the numbers, and, you know, this touches on what you just said too, but like 46% of his possessions are at point guard, and they have a net rating of -16.4, which is bad, but it's not quite as bad as the 54% of his possessions at shooting guard, where the net rating is -23.8. And, you know, a lot of that comes with Jordan Poole, and a lot of the Jordan Poole numbers are not ideal. But it also kind of plays into the issues of who Bub is and kind of has been going back to last year as a shooter, where at Pittsburgh last year, he was this dynamic, lethal, off the bounce shooter, pull up shooter, and one of the best in the country. And his numbers are kind of reflect that as well this year. And off the catch, it's a totally different story. So I don't get why there's so much. Like, I know they have Poole, I know they have Brogdon, but if this guy's your future, if he's your future point guard, why are the bulk of his minutes not coming at that point guard spot where you can really leverage that two-man game potential, build that chemistry, use his pull-up shooting threat, use and kind of continue to grow and elevate his playmaking capabilities? It just feels kind of bizarre.
I'm glad to hear you say that as like someone outside of the Wizards fandom bubble here, because sometimes I'm like, all right, am I being overly critical? Does it really matter? Last year, they were seemingly really content to bring Bilal Coulibaly along very slowly and just kind of ease him into more reps and things like that. But this year, like, you saw Bub kind of have the keys in summer league, be on ball considerably more. Yeah. And he didn't shoot a great percentage, but he was effective, if that makes sense. Like, he actually had impact on the game. And I think what you just said, I'm glad the numbers bear that out, because I think that's kind of what we've been seeing. It's like, oh, like, when he has the keys and can do some stuff, there were a couple opportunities where he was kind of the lead creator out there. Early in the year, they had a couple minutes where it was him, Keyshawn George, Bilal Coulibaly, Alex Sarr, and then miscellaneous fifth guy. And they were fun, and they were moving the ball, and they were harder to guard, and it was just kind of scrappy. And, you know, they were still doing, like, dumb rookie stuff when you get that many young guys out on the court together. Right. But like, it's like, this is what Wizards fans want to see a whole year of. And I get, like, you have to maybe rehab value of some of these veteran guys, or at least that's what they're trying to do and haven't been, like, ultimately super successful of milking, you know, the last drop out of these veteran assets. But if that's the hope, and after like the trade deadline, they're just going to hand him the ball and be like, here's 35 minutes a game as like the on ball guy. Like, you know, I think it's easier to be like, okay, I can live with that if that's where we're headed. But just not knowing kind of how they see him, and if that actually is the plan, or you know, or what they really envision for him is a part that's like a little harder to wrestle with, or maybe seeing it's like kind of almost a 50-50 split is maybe they just want to see enough minutes of both early. And then, all right, now we've got enough sample size to really make a determination of he's clearly better in one facet than the other. Here's some stuff to work on in the offseason. Here's the things we'll continue to kind of feed him, you know, the rest of the year.
That's a really fascinating point, and one I didn't really think of like, all right, they're using this first quarter of the season as like an experiment. Like, all right, let's figure out, like, is there that kind of versatility or not? My concern with that, though, is like I get that they're planning on being bad. They're supposed to be bad. You know, the expectation is to be bad, whatever. And that this is a growing season. But my concern with kind of if this minute split of being the one, being the two, kind of the longer it goes, I worry about what kind of habits that instills and like missed opportunities in terms of building that chemistry, because it is so freaking hard to be a point guard in the NBA. Like, that threshold is insanely high, and it's like, all right, well, if we're already acknowledging that this season there are no expectations to win, feels like a really, really ideal opportunity to get a guy who physically has a long way to go and is still pretty raw. Feels like a great opportunity to kind of fast track that learning curve.
Yeah, it just they seem very committed to this Jordan Poole experiment. It is better this year. I still, it's not my favorite thing to watch personally. You know, there's a large passionate portion of our fan base that adamantly disagree with me on that he's great, and I, you know, to each their own. But you just, at the very least, when Poole is not in the game, you've got to find every possible minute, I think, for Bub to be the main guy. And like I said, that took a hit with Brogdon coming back. And to me, Brogdon's best value is that he can kind of do either and be productive. So that seems like a great guy for Bub to learn from and shadow, like similarly sized guys. Neither of them are like the burstiest player. So, you know, if he can pick up little tricks of the trade from him along the way, I think that's great. And if you can have Brogdon be next to him as that off-ball guy, but a safety valve when needed, and play them a lot of minutes together, like, I kind of like that more. It's just, like, the Poole thing was so bad when he was the off-ball guy that you almost can't carve out enough minutes to have Bub on ball and Poole off-ball and have them even be, like, remotely competitive. So it's just, it's a weird mix, and it's a weird fit, and I think fans would love to see them kind of pick more of a lane in what they're doing, and why, you know, like, being more purposeful, or at least obviously purposeful to us, right, about what they're trying to get out of it.
Fair. So I feel like you've kind of answered this in one way or the other, but recently Bub's minutes have taken are trending downwards. He was up around like 30 a game. That's last couple games or couple weeks. It's dropping a little more towards like 20-25. Is that purely because of Brogdon kind of getting healthy, coming back to the lineup, or are there potentially some more concerning factors in that?
You'd have like one here or there where, you know, he'd take a couple minute hit, but I do think the more consistent drop off seemed to coincide with Brogdon's like easing back into the lineup. It's sort of right around that like Thanksgiving time frame, and I think that's basically right around the time they were starting to ramp Brogdon back up there too. So it's like you said, you got down into the kind of 20s and things like that. He stopped starting games right after a Knicks loss, so on the 18th. So he's kind of moved more into that bench role. I don't know if it's something they saw, if it's that we've got to get Brogdon minutes thing. It could be a little bit of a combination of the two, but I don't think he was necessarily playing any worse than he had been. Like, that Knicks game actually was probably his most productive game of the year, and that was the last game he started, which I also kind of wonder what message, you know, that sends to a young guy. Also, you have a game where you go 7 of 16, 4 of 8 from three, have 4 rebounds, 2 assists, score 18 points, and then, you know, you're immediately kind of moved into a reserve role. Like, I don't know how I would take that if I were a young, impressionable player.
Yeah, especially when team struggling. It's like, I just balled out. What are we doing? And now I'm sitting again. Like, I'm figuring this stuff out. Let's keep this rolling.
Exactly.
All right. So I feel like I've been a little too negative. So what has kind of impressed you the most so far about Bub? And, you know, you can go all the way back to Summer League too. But he's a really talented, ton of upside, you know, player, still very raw. But so far, what has kind of been the most impressive or surprising part about his game in a good way?
Yeah, I think I'm going to give you some like GM speak almost and like some platitudes here, but they said from like day one in camp, like he's our most competitive player. And you've actually seen that from day one. And this is a Wizards team that like, I think we all could look at this roster and if we're being objective, know they would be bad because they're intended to be bad. And, you know, I said from day one, I didn't think they would surpass last year's win total of 15 games. So it's like, I clearly saw they'd be bad, but I thought they'd be more competitive as a group than they've been, like scrappier and plucky, you know, like and get out there and kind of give guys a little bit more of a scare than they have. And there's been a lot of games recently where it's like, oh, we're 14 minutes into the game and they're down 27 already. Like, but Bub is the one that doesn't seem discouraged by that. And, you know, they got beat pretty bad by Dallas last night, you know, after we're recording this. And, you know, Bub in the postgame was like, look, I'm trying not to be too mad about it. Like, it is what it is. This is kind of where we're at in our process. And I'm just trying to be grateful and humble. And I got to guard Kyrie Irving last night, so I learned some things and I'm taking things that I can use and incorporate in the future. So I think he's got like the right mindset. You know, he's not the like, oh, well, it doesn't matter if we lose games, but it's like, hey, I understand that we don't want to lose, but this is kind of where we're at right now. And I'll take the good with the bad. So hearing those things to a man, they all talk about like he's scrappy. He'll get up in dudes. The first game of the season against Boston, you know, he was chirping at Drew Holiday and they were bumping each other around and you're like, okay, like this is, you know, there's something here. And I think that this kind of franchise in general has lacked a little bit of like, you know, the dog mentality, right, air quotes, but that is sort of like the stereotypical Baltimore guard of like, you know, like we're ready to take on all challengers. And I think injecting a little bit of that into this group overall is a good thing. They've gone out of their way to draft, like by all accounts, nice guys. And you can do that, but they can't be nice guys on the court. And yeah, I think he plays with enough of that chip. Like this was a guy that was not projected to be not only not a one and done, but this is not like a five-star guy. And he was unheralded until late in his high school recruiting process. So like, this is a dude that's worked for everything he's got, you know, he's earned everything he's gotten. And I think that's a really good thing to sort of carry over to the other rookies. Like, you know, Coulibaly is sort of not the most directly assertive or aggressive guy on the offensive end. He seems to have confidence and swagger about his defense. So hopefully that carries over. But like Bub is not shy and he's not sort of phased by the moment. And I think that's really good. Like you can kind of ignore the percentages and the efficiency and things like that, but he's competing. He's also competed better on the defensive end. Like I thought he was pretty bad defensively at Pittsburgh. I can't remember what your take on his defense was, but I don't think anyone watched him and thought like, oh, this was a lockdown college basketball defender.
Yeah.
But he's tried like hard and not shied away from big matchups this year. And I love seeing that.
Yeah. And my big thing with the defense for him last year at Pittsburgh was there was enough that you could tell he wanted to defend, like fundamentally, technically, schematically. He didn't always seem to know what he was supposed to be doing or like consistently in the wrong spot or figuring out how to navigate screens and stuff. And that there was a long way to go there, but more often than not, the effort seemed to be there and the rotations and, you know, sometimes it was good. And when it was good, it looked really good, but there were also some big time lulls and low points too. But yeah. And the selling point with him was always the pull-up shooting, the playmaking, the rebounding. But I always kind of felt like there was potential there to be at least a net neutral defender, like at worst, like at his peak, that's kind of what I would expect him to be on the defensive end. But the fact that he's already kind of being that competitive, showing that type of effort, showing that desire to defend is really, really encouraging.
What you just said is kind of where I thought he'd be. Is like, if he's just a solid enough defender, like that's okay. But there's been opportunity, like moments here where it's like really bad. And like that was just a train wreck possession. And I'm a bad like evaluator of defense in the NBA, especially because I can't tell enough about whose responsibility certain things actually were, or who screwed it up, or if we both screwed it up. So I don't pretend to like be able to grade them on any like super technical level, but there are times where they look like a train wreck as a group, and there are moments where he's involved in that. But there's just enough of those sort of like positive flashes where, you know, he'll cut off a bigger player and body him up, and you're just like, yeah, okay, like this is a dude that you're not going to run through. And it sort of reminds me of like I think Steph Curry over time became like a kind of underrated defender of like mm-hmm. you couldn't pick on him. Like, you know, if Bub can be that kind of guy where people aren't like, okay, that's the guy we're targeting every time down the floor, like that's fine. And I've seen enough there to think that that's definitely the case. And maybe he's got potential to be even better than that, because he's like a sturdily built guy and he's not the most explosive. But if you're smart and you have feel and you can be good positioning, like, again, that's why I would be watching as much Malcolm Brogdon while they're together as possible, just because that's the kind of the guy I see him being, like that 15 point per game. Maybe can do some on ball stuff for you, but maybe the versatility off ball, if all those things improve, is great. But he's not going to beat you by being like this freak athlete or getting to the rim at will. Like, he's going to have to do some pull ups and things like that, and just beat you with savvy. And I think Brogdon, while healthy, was a pretty solid NBA defender, if not good. So maybe there's little tricks he can pick up along the way too.
For sure. Kind of on the flip side of the excitement, sorry to get negative again here, but has there been anything that's been like, oh, this is a real problem, or like a glaring issue, you know, whether it's the defense or the shooting off the catch or the at rim finishing or any of that stuff, where like long term you're thinking this might be pretty difficult to overcome?
There are like one or two times, and this is sort of like jokingly or at least flippant, that I've like asked buddies, like, do you think he can dunk? like you know, other than like a totally wide open fast break,
because right,
he just seems to shy away from contact going toward the rim in this few situations where he actually does. And I just like, is that a mindset thing, or is it I just physically I doesn't feel like he's in a position where he can challenge guys athletically? Like, I don't really know what that is. Except he is like a pretty sturdily built, you know, 19-year-old. Like, I would think he could use his physicality a little bit more effectively. Like, there are times when there are smaller guys than him guarding him and doesn't ever really seem to take advantage of that. Like, to me, I would think he'd be the perfect, you know, get a guy on your hip and just kind of barrel to the hoop sort of player. And you never see that. Like, there's never been one Wizards highlight of like, oh my gosh, like, Bub even tried to put a guy on a poster or anything like that. I just like to see it once or time, like a few moments of reckless abandon. I would just be like a positive indicator.
Absolutely. All right. So you kind of talked about the young core before, and you know, a few more numbers here, but when that young core of Bub, George, Sar, and Koulibaly are on the court without Jordan Poole, the net rating is still a rough negative 12.5, sure, but the offensive rating is up to 119.1, which is in the 83rd percentile, and their effective field goal rate is at 60.5, which is in the 98th percentile. Now, they only have 115 possessions of that, you know, of those four guys being on the court together so far. The defense is awful. It's over, defensive rating is over 131, but that the offense kind of running that seamlessly is really encouraging. So is this just a case to get more of that? The roster is just going to kind of have to turn over, unfortunately.
Yeah, I wonder about that a lot, actually. And like, I would expect the defense with basically like Koulibaly is like a rookie plus this year, right? Like, he didn't get a ton of run last year and was kind of like a fast tracked prospect into last year's draft. So to me, it's like basically a four rookie unit out there. Like, you would expect that they're just going to get killed on that end.
Right.
But the ball movement is like so crisp when it's those four together and any other player that's not a total ball stopper. And I'll just leave out any names there. People can infer from that what they will. But I think that's like a sneaky, underrated component of all four players that they've tried to draft here, is that they are unselfish guys. Like, now there's obviously moments when any player is like, oh no, you shouldn't have taken that shot. But they seem to look and want to create for each other. And there was one particular possession or like stretch of possessions in a row earlier in the year, and I'm blanking on what game, but you had those four out there together and they just pushed it in transition, like four or five consecutive possessions. And like Keyshawn George hit a three. Then he like ball faked a three and kicked it to the corner. I think Kispert was the fifth and he shot off the other. Like the ball was just zipping all around the perimeter. And you're like, yes, we're playing five out basketball. The ball's actually moving. Someone didn't have to dribble 15 times before they got a shot off. Like, that's what you want to see more of. So to me, like, whatever you need to do to make that, you know, that group out there together, like, if that's really your future, play them as many minutes together now as you can. It's like we talked about earlier, like this should be the year to experiment with, like, do these guys all fit together? Let them learn who wants the ball in what spots. Like, they must be playing together a good amount and like from even after summer league, but in like camp and in practice, because they felt like they had chemistry already. So whatever you can do to mature that or speed that kind of growth up together, I think would be like the, you know, the best interest of the franchise.
All right. So a lot of basketball left, obviously, you know, what, like 3/4 of the season or so. Yeah. What are you kind of your expectations or hopes with Bub for the rest of the year?
I think just continuing to like keep up that competitiveness too. Like I mentioned, he said the right things last night, but they're going to lose like probably a historical amount of games this year. Yeah. And that can take a toll, especially on young guys. And I think, you know, staying healthy, but staying in the right mindset and mentally healthy is going to be like it's a long season for everybody. And a young guy that didn't really play up until last year, what he played like 30 college games, 33, something in that ballpark. You know, we're almost to that if you factor in like summer league and preseason games and stuff like that. So can he kind of hold up and continue to get a bunch of like as many minutes as possible, just force feed him minutes on ball, like we talked about. And I don't really care about any of the percentages or any of those things for this particular year. I would like to see him shoot, you know, a little better from two and find a few ways to get himself just like a couple easier baskets. I think free throw rate would be a thing I would love to see, just sort of them like emphasize with him. And maybe they do, maybe it's just not there yet. As a guy like him gets stronger, maybe he'll feel more confident doing that. But like only three free throws a game, I think is a disservice to him. And so finding ways to get him going downhill, things like that, would be better, I would think, for everybody.
Makes sense. And yeah, the at-rim stuff was weirdly an issue at Pitt too, where it's super inconsistent. And like you said, free throws are incredibly easy points to get and can kind of get you in that rhythm. And he just never really capitalizes on it. And it's not like he's a tiny guy. He's listed like, what, 6'4", 6'5"? Slender, skinny, but, you know, what, 19, 20-year-old? I think he's gonna be a really kind of fascinating case study over these next couple of years as he gets stronger. It's like, all right, how much of that at rim finishing is influenced and kind of, you know, by that at least current lack of strength? That'll be really fascinating.
I thought he was at 2 free throws a game. He's actually at 1.3. I didn't have that in front of me. Like,
yeah, that's tough.
You can't be taking 1 free throw a game if you're him. And like, yeah, he's skinny and got to fill out, but he's also like a broad shoulder guy. Like, he's got like a little football build to him almost. Like, once he just kind of fills out that frame, I think he's a dude that, you know, can kind of throw his weight around a little bit, hopefully. And maybe he just feels more confident about doing that. Like, I think he was kind of a late grower and stuff like that too. So sometimes guys that are used to being a little undersized, maybe they like shy away from trying to get, you know, into the paint. I'm just bit of guessing or grasping at straws here a little bit, but that's got to be a point of emphasis for them.
Absolutely. All right. As we kind of wrap this up, thoughts on Bilal Coulibaly's growth, initial impressions on Alex Sarr, Keyshawn George, any other fun tidbits with this Wizards team. I'll let you just kind of take it away and touch go in whatever direction excites you.
Yeah, I mean, Coulibaly was the one. Like, there's been enough this year where when it looks really good, it's like very easy to get excited about, and I think you can see like the blueprint of where he's at. And there was like kind of a sluggish maybe couple game start to the year, and then he hit a little stride for a while, and you thought like, oh, okay, like now he's figured it out, and now he's turned it on, and we've seen some real regression. Kyle Kuzma came back, now Brogdon's back, and you know, last night's or the other night's game against Dallas, like he missed every field goal attempt he took, but he was back up to 10 field goal attempts. And like, that's just alone. I want to see that from him every game the rest of the year. I think it's awesome. Like Luka Doncic last night was like, hey, like this guy anticipated every move I was going to make. And like 2 or 3 years in, you start to learn people's tendencies, but like, you know, he's going to be a really, really good player on that end of the floor. Like he gets that sort of like, you know, recognition from the top players in the league, like pretty much universally after they play Washington. And I think that's awesome to hear those superlatives on one side of the ball, but we've kind of reverted back into like a lot of him standing in the corner kind of stuff. And like we were talking about with Bub, like this is the year to workshop and just clear out a side of the floor for him and see what he can do with guys. And there have been a few moments where it's like, oh, okay, this is better. He can only drive right now. I think teams figured that out pretty quickly. That was a real challenge here in Washington with Denny Avdija for a long time. Like he could only go one way. And once teams understood that, it made him really hard to guard. And especially if you're not hitting enough jump shots, you know, to kind of keep teams honest, like they were just sort of sagging off and playing in one direction. So I think the shooting will have to come around similarly. Like once it did for Denny, like he really popped and did some of these other things. And that's great. But, you know, it just seems like a good dude. And the skills are clearly like a little sharper than they were last year. The handle is a little tighter, at least going one way. The jumper looks a little more fluid and like a little less dip on the release and stuff like, so there's some things like they're clearly doing with him. I just want to see like the confidence sort of like matriculate to offense as well too. Like he's like openly like, you know, talking trash to other guys on about like, oh, I can lock anybody down, like that kind of stuff. And the other night, Milwaukee put Dame Lillard on him for like a large portion of the game, and he didn't, like, I don't remember him like attacking Damian Lillard once. And at this point in Lillard's career, I would say he's like definitely below average NBA defender. And you're Coulibaly, you're 5 inches taller than him, way more athletic. Whether you got the tightest handle or not, you should be able to like take advantage of some of that. So that would be big. Keyshawn George, he looks like he can shoot. Got to make some shots at some point here too. They're getting actually pretty good looks for him. He's made just a putrid percentage of them so far, but there's just like little flashes of things from him too. He's got a little wiggle to him. He's defended better than I thought he would too. Again, same kind of rookie things, like get beat back door here or something, but he's held up pretty well. And I think for him, you're starting to see a little slippage on the defensive end as he struggled a little offensively too. He's another guy that the minutes took a hit when Kyle Kuzma came back, and he'd had a pretty good stretch there. So I think for all of those guys, I'd just like to see them freed up to do their thing. And this is like a corny analogy, but like if anybody watched the movie Moneyball, like there was a situation where like they had to trade a player to force the coach to play a certain other player, you know, like,
yeah, that's almost what I was hinting at with like the how do we get this 4-man grouping more minutes? Yeah,
exactly. Like you might have to save them from themselves here and like just clear dudes out to be able to make that be enough of a point of emphasis. So we'll see. The Alex Starr one I already mentioned. My big complaint there is just like letting him shoot threes at a Klay Thompson-esque rate doesn't really make sense. And I'm always of the opinion, this is like maybe an old school basketball take, but like work your way out from the hoop and add more complexity. And if you can't shoot, like, why don't we design a few plays for you, you know, that put you in a success, you know, whatever we think you can be successful at offensively, why don't we do more of that? And you missing open pick and pop three after three can't really be the best we can do for you. So that worries me a little bit so far.
I know I said we weren't going to dive into Saar here, but I think that's really kind of a fascinating point. So yeah, I mean, I'm going to break my own rule here. But what kind of where do you stand on that? It's a very kind of thin line of letting a young guy play through his mistakes and develop in real time, because nothing's more valuable in terms of development than actual minutes and playing. Mm-hmm. But at the flip side of that, you can develop a lot of really, really bad habits and kind of shatter confidence and, you know, potential growth by continuously failing over and over and over again and being put in situations that aren't conducive to what you're actually good at. And Saar has kind of always been a theoretical shooter. You know, there's some mechanical stuff that needs fixing, and the results weren't there all year last year. Mm-hmm. But when he kind of got into the mid-range and like low post and short roll stuff, it got more effective. So I don't know, but it seems, it seems harmful to just kind of let him solely play this finesse perimeter-based game.
It's what he did in Summer League, and I was like, it's Summer League, like, meh, I can dismiss that for five games, but you know, we've seen enough sample size now that it's clearly a thing they're not only okay with, but trying to emphasize. And I think the best version of him is a capable guy that allows you to play five out and things like that. But it's not even playing through mistakes. Like if he's getting wide open threes, he should take them. So it's not a mistake to take it. He's just shown he can't make them yet.
Right.
So at some point, like,
so is it more so a mistake just on the coaching staff of relentlessly putting him in those positions to take these shots that he's kind of continuously proving he can't make?
That's kind of where I'm at too, or at least find a way to get him, like, whatever you're doing film-wise, and again, maybe they're just experimenting enough still here to figure out what he can or can't do, so you have like real things to draw some trends from.
For sure.
There are some situations where like his feet are set and he looks ready to go, and he'll drill a three and you're like, oh, okay. Like maybe whatever happened there, let's recreate, you know, that. And then there are other times like he'll back up behind the 3-point line to take a three. And it's like, maybe you would have just been better taking a long inefficient 18 footer, but at least it would have been fluid than like trying to force something. So I wrestle with that personally of like, yeah, you need him to make those things eventually to be the best version of himself. But do we need him to make them right now? Or could we find a few ways to get him a couple easy baskets? Like to me, he's going to have, you know, an advantage quickness wise over a lot of the guys guarding him. Not everybody, but he's also got a pretty decent handle. Like he'll grab and gub a little bit, and we can't find a way to use him as a driver. I would love to see maybe some kind of like inverted pick and roll where like he's actually the guy with the ball. Like they have not done that a single time to my knowledge this entire year where he initiates that with anybody. So this is the kind of stuff I'd be trying. Like when people talk about like throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks, like that's what I'd want to see them take a few more like swings at of can he do those sorts of things? Can we get him going downhill that way would be interesting. I know he's not really like a lob threat kind of guy, but he's not unathletic. He's pretty long. Like just because he hasn't been used that way a lot thus far doesn't mean we shouldn't try to find ways to do that. Like there was a reasonable, and at least they made some attempt last year to do like Gafford as the roller with Poole, and they weren't as effective as they should have been. But like, I don't know, like Saar couldn't try to take a few of those sets that they had for Gafford. So it's just kind of weird. That's like the word I keep using for it. So I don't know what is he? What do they view him as? How do you reconcile those two things? The one anecdote I go back to is a couple years ago when Benedict Mathurin was a rookie for the Pacers. Like they were like, here are five plays we took from the Arizona playbook where you were most successful. They are now a part of our playbook.
Yeah.
Like, what was Alex Saar good at? I mean, like we drafted this guy number two, right? So presumably there were some things offensively he did better than others. I think he's like a really good short roll passer already for a rookie. Like let him do that. Just like let him. Those are the kind of mistakes I'd want to see him play through. If he throws the ball away a little bit, like so be it. And he's got high turnovers there. Like I don't care. I'd rather see him turn the ball over because he missed a pass, you know, somebody cutting off of him, then like clanking another brick three.
Weird is always an ideal adjective to use with your professional franchise. But Matt, this was awesome. I really appreciate the insight and you taking the time. Please plug away, tell everyone where they can find your work, how they can support you, all that good stuff.
If you're an absolute masochist and you want to hear more about the Wizards than you've just heard here, it's Believe in Wizards. It's myself and former Wizard center Jihadi White going about once a week. And then we'll do pre and post game shows for a large portion of the game. It's a little hard to do them for every game, just knowing how they play themselves out. But come check us out and just honestly plug you guys, because like this is something I listen to a lot. Obviously, as a Wizards fan, there's a lot of opportunity to pay attention to the draft. So what you guys are doing with No Ceilings overall has been awesome to watch. And I appreciate all the content because it keeps us sort of sane to have that hope for the future. And looking forward to following this particular draft cycle even harder than most, given the Wizards presumably have locked themselves into a top four pick here already.
Matt does awesome work. I also love some of the local kind of college hoop coverage that you guys do as well. Go support Matt. Really good work all around. Matt, thank you.
Appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nothing is off limits as host Sophia Franklin dishes on her personal life, like toxic relationships, dating and hookups, and dealing with insecurities, all with humor and real talk. Find Sophia with an F on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Really appreciate Matt taking the time. I loved his insight. A lot of really good stuff there. Make sure to go support him. He does really good work covering the Wizards. But we're moving on to next week. Let's bring up the wheel, figure out who we have coming up. All right, here's the wheel.
Let's go. I love the concept. They're just magical.
Oh, should be a fun one. De Silva from the Orlando Magic. Absolutely love it. De Silva's getting a ton of run. Up and down efficiency numbers, but getting a big-time opportunity for a Magic team that's playing really well. So we will yet again get another really insightful, connected guest who really knows their stuff to kind of talk us through Tristan De Silva and the rest of that Orlando Magic team and just kind of how their season's going so far. If you guys have been enjoying the series or have recommendations, likes, dislikes, potential guests that you would love to hear from and get on the show, let me know. But in the meantime, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. NoCeilingsNBA.com. I'm Tyler Metcalf. You can follow me at TMetcalf11. Until next week, see ya.